selling your products via Hong Kong e-commerce. Global from Asia, episode number 102.
Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Things are drying up here nicely in the south of China. Had a pretty massive typhoon the other week that was like permanently rain for day and night. But the sun is out and life is good. But my Google Now keeps giving push notifications warning me that the air pollution is at dangerous levels. But I guess that's the trade-off of being here and having some nice weather. Also, I'm really excited for the webinar I'm going to be hosting about optimizing your Hong Kong company. I'm going to give some tips and tricks for those that already have a company here and are trying to figure out how to best organize and prepare for the yearly filing and just overall business in general. So that's going to be on Thursday, October 22nd at 9 p.m. Hong Kong time. For those that want more information and figure out what time zones they are in, what time it will be, and want to register, we have globalfromasia.com/HK webinar. So check it out. All right. And now for this week's show, we have Damian Boss on here. Awesome name. Sharing about his business experiences in e-commerce in Hong Kong, in the local market, and exiting. It's a flash sales site. And he gives some pretty cool ideas I think will be really relevant for a lot of listeners. He doesn't speak Chinese, but made a Chinese e-commerce website and was able to successfully sell it. So it's a pretty good one. And let's listen in. Okay. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another Global from Asia podcast. We have with us the boss of Hong Kong e-commerce, Damian Boss. I like the name. So thanks for coming on the show, Damian.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me. It's good to chat with you.
Yeah. So I'm glad we had our mutual friend, the super connector, Robert Allender, connect us. And we've been keeping in touch now. So you've been out here in Asia for quite some time, 10 years now. Maybe do a little bit of intro of how you got here.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I finished my business degree back in Australia, and I wasn't really ready to get started into corporate life straight away. I wanted to travel. So I ended up coming out to Asia and thought I was going to spend 6 months, and ended up spending a year or so just traveling around, and came through China and Hong Kong a few times and thought, wow, Hong Kong's a pretty fantastic place to live and work. And I met a few people here. And so after my travels, I came back with a suitcase and basically turned up without a job, and managed to find a job and settle into the city. And I've been here since then. So yeah, it's been a bit of an exciting adventure, probably a bit longer than my family were expecting me to take, but it's a great place to live and work.
Yeah, I totally understand about the family thing. I was just back, and I think they're still in shock. It's about 7 or 8 years for me, so that's a big thing for the family, right? Okay, and so today we have you on to share about e-commerce in Hong Kong and your experience with privatesales.hk, which you just recently exited. So that's great. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Sure. So maybe first, what is privatesales.hk, and give a little overview of what the business is?
Yeah. So I started the business about 3 years ago, and I'd noticed a trend in flash retail across the States, and actually it started earlier on in Europe, where a lot of fashion businesses were basically doing flash sales online for branded product, selling a well-known product at say 50 to 70 or even 80% off retail prices in short-term flash sales, maybe 3 to 5 days to catch that sale. And after that time period, it's you lose the chance to buy that product anymore. So it's really encouraging people to get on and buy quickly and get a good deal. And so I kind of looked around Hong Kong after discovering the model and thinking, well, there's no one really doing this in Hong Kong. And it seems to be working pretty well in Europe and in the States. In the US, you might have companies like, say, Gilt Group or Rue La La, and then Amazon's even got their own version nowadays for fashion. And so yeah, basically took the plunge and quit my job in finance and put our spare cash into building a site and putting together a list of brands and partners that we'd work with. And the concept was basically we'd go and talk to fashion brands here in Hong Kong, where most of the headquarters are based here, and ask them for their last season stock that they couldn't sell last year, and then sell it online on our site for 50 to 70% off. And we take a margin on that. And then at the end of a week's flash sale, we'd fulfill those orders, and then we'd make a payment after fulfilling the orders to our supplier. So pretty interesting cash positive model in terms of sourcing and not having to hold a lot of stock and take risk, and really just about providing really great deals on fashion. So we did that for the last couple of years and built a lot of great relationships with brands like Diesel and Gucci and a lot of fashion accessories and apparel brands here in Hong Kong.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, that's great. And so there's a lot more to it than, of course, seeing the opportunity in the West. Or like you're specializing in, we'll talk about your book a little bit later, but you have a book about it now too. But, you know, here in Asia, it's a lot of differences in e-commerce. So we're going to try to cover a little bit of that today. So we've had some other people on the show, on the podcast, talking about merchant accounts and banking and offline, online, e-commerce. So, you know, I'm sure people are going to be interested in hearing more. You know, at least for me, you know, Hong Kong is an interesting space because it's a pretty small area, and people still, at least from what I understand, like to still go downstairs to the shops because, you know, it's pretty concentrated area. So maybe you can give us a little bit of overview of how the e-commerce market in Hong Kong is nowadays.
Yeah. Well, to take you back to when I first arrived here in 2005, 2006, there was really no e-commerce to speak of. You know, there was no kind of iTunes store even to buy music, or big guys like Groupon or other retailers online. There was just really nothing to speak of. And I think over my period of time here in the last 7 or 8 years or more, it's really started to take off. I think people have realized the convenience of buying online. There's still a big portion of the public here in Hong Kong that prefer to probably go physically to a store and try something on, or try to go and bargain for a better price with the store owner or something like that. But I think the research that I've seen has all been really positive. I saw something fairly recently, actually it was about a year and a half ago already. It said 9 out of 10 people had bought something online before here in Hong Kong. And when you ask people, do they shop online, even if they say no, and if you probe a little bit and say, well, did you book a movie ticket online? Because you kind of have to do that here in Hong Kong to get a seat, you know, or did you book your last travel tickets online? Most people will say, oh yeah, I did actually. So, you know, and they use iTunes, and, you know, so we're getting more and more used to doing more and more things shopping-wise online. So that landscape really has changed in the last few years from what I've seen. And in terms of our take-up rate and conversion rates, you know, they're quite similar to what I've seen in Australia or the numbers I've seen out of the States as well. So we didn't seem to have too much trouble in convincing people to come online and shop for fashion online, which I initially queried because, you know, some of it's size sensitive. You have to fit with the product you're buying, and some people are very particular about the fabric or feeling the quality of the material or that sort of thing. But we did manage to move a reasonable amount of things like shoes, which you think, well, we have to try them on. But most people were willing to take the risk and buy them online.
Cool. Great. And then I'm honestly not so familiar with, this business model really, but so if they got the wrong size, usually it's pretty easy to switch. Is it the same within this model?
It was a bit trickier because we weren't actually holding any inventory ourselves, which was a nice thing as a business owner because we didn't have to take any risk on stock that didn't sell. But then if we had returns or exchanges, then we'd have to go back and forward with our supplier. Who was usually a wholesale, kind of a warehouse of these fashion brands. And, you know, one at a time or two at a time is not really what they like to do. They like to ship bulk. So, yeah, there was a few logistics challenges in that. And a lot of our uh, a lot of our peers around the region moved from our model of kind of just-in-time inventory management to saying, well, we have to go and invest in a warehouse eventually, store the product for the brand in our warehouse, and then ship it out of there while we're doing the sale. So that would have been the next phase of our growth, is investing in more infrastructure like that.
Got it. Yeah, so it does lead into my next point, is everybody always is curious about logistics. You know, a lot of listeners that are still doing like Western e-commerce, you know, or buying in factories and selling overseas, but they're always curious about logistics in Hong Kong or in Asia. Do you maybe give us a little bit of an overview how that would work?
Yeah, I mean, our model is kind of a bit tricky. We didn't have just one product line and put it in a warehouse, and then when you sell it, you ship it. We were having constantly maybe five or six different flash sales every week. So we had, you know, web pages coming up, web pages getting pulled down, new products, new SKUs coming in and out of the doors all the time. So that made it a little bit of a challenge to kind of coordinate. And we were trying to move towards a fulfillment service, like a pick and pack fulfillment service provider. But I think a lot of them are better geared up for... I guess people who are shipping the same product week in, week out with a limited product line, rather than our kind of dynamic kind of mix of products where we, you know, have five or six different set of SKUs every week.
Sure.
Coming in and out. So we handled the logistics internally ourselves. We had a small warehouse and we just kind of managed that ourselves. But we would have probably had to have gone, as we scaled up further, we would have had to have gone to a pick and pack fulfillment provider, which would have taken some management as well from our side, because, like I mentioned, there's so many moving parts going on with our business model.
Yeah, I can imagine it. I had some experience in e-commerce for a while, and I mean, I guess there's always a trade-off, but I hated having the inventory. You know, I did some bank loans and stuff, and, you know, paying for warehousing, and it there's always trade-offs in the different supply chains, right? So,
sure. Yeah, but there are some great fulfillment companies and pick and pack companies that I've kind of met along the way here in Hong Kong. So like Easy Ship and Shipwire and Red Hair and Royale. There's kind of four pick and pack fulfillment companies that can store your products and do the pick and pack service for you for a couple of US dollars, a parcel kind of thing. So
awesome.
That can be quite an easy way to not have to worry about any warehousing and logistics and just focus on being a digital business and focus on the marketing.
Agreed. Yeah, focus on your core strengths is always a critical part. I agree. And then people are always probably wondering about languages. So did you have a lot of bilingual, the site is bilingual, English and then Cantonese, and then there's also potentially Mandarin, but, you know, like, how did you deal with languages?
Yeah, so we started the business in English only because it was just basically me starting the company at the beginning, and then quickly realized after we did our research that we obviously knew that the majority of the population preferred Cantonese preferred traditional Chinese here in the Hong Kong market, and a lot of our peers, like Groupon, for example, were selling more than 80% of their business through their Chinese website. So pretty quickly on, we translated the whole site into traditional Chinese and we ran everything in dual language, which did increase the workload. Of course, we needed to have Chinese staff because my Chinese isn't very good, definitely not that good. And we had to invest in that. And not too long after, about a year after, we were doing about 70 to 80% of our business to Chinese versus English speakers.
Awesome.
So that was profitable strategy. And obviously you've got to know where your market is. It's a fairly limited English speaking or expat market here in Hong Kong. The real market is the other 4 million or so active internet users who are preferring traditional Chinese, I guess.
Yep, I got in. Just to kind of fill in those that are listening that might not know, traditional Chinese is Cantonese, or, you know, like the more in the south of China and Hong Kong, and they speak that, whereas in mainland China, it's simplified Chinese or Mandarin, just to fill in people that might not follow that. So cool. So then you have a bilingual site and payment online. How is payment breakdown? So it's like 80% Chinese buyers and And then I know PayPal is pretty well spread inside of Hong Kong. Is that the primary way people pay?
Yeah, we did our research on basically came down to either PayPal or AsiaPay in terms of providers. But really the only choice for a new startup in our perspective was PayPal. So we applied for a PayPal account with their website Payments Pro hosted solution, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And they allowed us to then basically put the PayPal sandbox, they call it, into our web page. So we're not actually redirecting our customer away from our page to the PayPal page and then back to our page to make a transaction. The customer will stay on our website the whole time, was quite important for me in terms of the user experience and providing, I guess, a luxury and professional feel for the website, giving them the confidence to check out. And that was pretty easy. We got that account set up pretty quickly with PayPal after some paperwork. So we've been pretty happy with that so far. The only qualm I would have is that they don't take American Express on that service. So it's really Visa, MasterCard, or using a PayPal account to pay. And we found that actually less than 1%, I guess, were using PayPal to pay. It was all through Visa or MasterCard.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, thanks for sharing. And, I know a lot of people struggle with the currency, and I think a lot of foreigners still prefer U.S. dollar, but I think you probably were operating purely in Hong Kong dollars for this business.
We chose Hong Kong dollars because we did focus ourselves and part of our brand, all of our branding and everything was Hong Kong focused as well, being a local Hong Kong company. So privatesales.hk, and everything was in Hong Kong dollars and free shipping within Hong Kong. And so we basically tried to focus that in on really on the customer here in Hong Kong, which did limit us a little bit. Like I mentioned, there's about 7 million or so people in Hong Kong, but active internet users, there might be only about 3.5 or 4 million. So yeah, we decided to sell in Hong Kong dollars only. And really, that was the only market that we were addressing. So that was fine for us. But I guess if you're doing a regional play and you're selling across the region, that is a challenge. Do you offer multiple currencies? And then how many? Because it's quite a fragmented region.
Exactly.
Across Asia.
Yeah.
Or do you just stick with USD and hope people are confident enough to do their own conversion and understand how much it's going to cost them in their home currency?
Yeah, totally. I mean, this is what makes it so complex here. And
coming back to the payment as well, I mean, it's quite common now for a lot of internet businesses in Asia to do cash on delivery, which, of course, you have to work out how that works in terms of confirming orders and then collecting that cash through your, say, courier company. That seems to be quite a popular way. I guess you could probably speak to that more in China as well, where people actually can get the product, try it on, and then see whether they're going to pay for it, I guess.
They've totally, like localized, which I guess that's one of the advantages in Asia is because it's started a little bit after the West, they had learned from some of the setbacks and like delivery men are like bankers or something too sometimes. It's crazy.
So I think it's important to, understand how your customer wants to pay as well. I mean, we had customers writing into us saying, hey, I don't have a credit card. Can we do a local bank transfer to your account and confirm things? And if that was a bit tricky for us because we often had limited stock of certain products. So the product might sell out online while we're processing a manual transaction for somebody else. So there were a few things like that were challenges, but if you're operating a fairly regular and predictable e-commerce business in terms of product selection, you might want to try to offer as many different payment ideas as possible and then whittle that down to what works for your customers.
Sure. Especially startups to take money however they can get it, right?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, sometimes it can be a pain to have to go on cash checks, or it can be, frustrating it can take a lot of work to operate multiple payment channels as well. So I guess you've got to really work out, is it worth your while? But, when you're starting up, got to try what works and whatever works to get you paid, right?
Definitely. Exactly. get the money. Some people sometimes forget that, but that's, I think, we got to focus on, especially starting up. So cool. Mm. This next one is a huge question, which, you know, could be a whole course, but customer acquisition, I mean, maybe just, so you have these, you know, private sales, HK, you have these flash sales happening each week, it seems. So you probably like email marketing or social media is like main way, or, you know, give us some maybe highlights.
Yeah. I mean, traditionally our model is really all about email marketing, building a database and kind of sending a daily email or at least a few times a week to the customer base, encouraging them to come back and telling them about what great products are on sale this week. But of course, you've got to acquire that database somehow as well. So, yeah, our strategy was mainly built around social media. Facebook here in Hong Kong was the best in terms of getting results, and then cost per click with Google and Yahoo pay per click, basically. So we had to work out our strategies of how to spend the least amount of money per click and get those customers to either, one, sign up to our database, or two, hopefully move through that process and actually go on to buy something. And so we had to watch that very carefully as to how we spent our money and what our cost per clicks were and what our customer acquisition costs ended up being, because that can become quite a competitive space, especially if you're competing with some of the bigger international guys like, say, Shopbop, who are trying to take the Asian markets as well in fashion from the US, or Net-a-Porter or ASOS or some of these big European online retailers. You actually end up competing for those same customers with the big guys. And if it's a battle of how much cash can you burn the quickest, those guys will probably win unless you're really well-funded.
Agreed. Yeah, we got to be... I think a lot of times people just hope they can have a marketing agency take care of this or something, but I really think that you as the business owner have to be on top of this for sure.
Really, at the crux of the business. I mean, at the end of the day, if you can't sell anything, you don't have a business.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to get, well, you have to get people to visit your website. And one of the key ways is either you do it organically through social media and you have a great strategy, or you have to pay for those clicks somehow through Facebook advertising or Google or Yahoo or Baidu or wherever you're at. But I think one thing to keep in mind is that I didn't quite know when I started my e-commerce business was what kind of conversion rates are you expecting of the people who visit your site? So out of 100 people who visit your website, how many do you think will actually buy something and spend money on the site? And, you know, I was probably a little naive when I started the business, but I thought maybe 4 or 5% of those people who come will end up buying something. You know, we've got some great deals here. We're going selling some good brands. Who wouldn't want to buy, you know, this at 70% off? But the reality was actually, you know, it was more like 1.5% to 2% maximum of the people who came actually converted into becoming a paying customer. So when you're doing your projections, you've got to take that into account. Basically, look at, well, if it's going to cost me $10 for every click that comes through and I'm converting 1 out of 100, that's a pretty expensive customer acquisition.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, learning PPC is definitely critical. It's a lot of numbers, but you got to just suck it up, and somebody in your team has to be really on top of that. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, yep. I'm curious, and I'm not sure how much you can share, but you know, the deal for the business. Do you want to share? It's been about a year now, so do you want to give us a little bit of background how the exit went? Or
actually, it's only been in the last month.
Oh, so sorry, I'm wrong. Okay,
it's quite recent, but I can't really share too much because of confidentiality.
Yeah,
you know, it's I think it's always interesting to have the conversations around, you know, your business partners. So it ended up actually being one of our suppliers who approached me and said, hey, we're looking to develop a retail outlet here. He's a wholesale business. And said, are you interested in partnering with us? Can I take a share in your business? And actually the conversations went further and he ended up buying the business from me.
Awesome.
So I think it's always good to have conversations and be open with each of your partners and even your competitors as well. I mean, it's you don't want to give all of your strategy away to your competitors, but it's good to know them and to talk with them and build relationships. You never know whether that's going to go as well.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. And I guess I'm not sure how long it might took you to make the deal, but I think another thing is have time and not be in a hurry, because that'll go against you for sure if that's because I know a lot of people sometimes are in a hurry. Maybe they're basically it won't be a good negotiation tactic if you're in a rush. So yeah, just I think right takes time for sure, and building relationships and knowing people in the industry, very cool. Mm-hmm. All right. I think you kind of covered it, but I always like to kind of say, and towards the end of the show, is like one tip, maybe somebody trying to get crack the Hong Kong e-commerce market, what to get started.
I guess I've got a lot of tips.
Yeah, there's so many. So
I guess one of the reasons why I wanted to write my book, which we'll talk about, in a bit, is I just accumulated so much information and I thought, well, why not just put this all down into one manual for somebody who wants to start an e-commerce business. So I guess my tip would be buy the book if you want, or at least visit my website, onlinebusinessasia.com, and take a look and you've got to get started at some stage. You can't just procrastinate and think and dream about starting a business one day. You can get started in your spare time. You don't have to quit your job. You don't necessarily have to go all in from the beginning. Maybe you can just give it a try on the weekends and see if you can get some traction. And then maybe eventually you can move over from your job to running your online business full time.
Yeah. It's definitely good advice. I think especially, there's a lot of people like reading and researching and learning, which is of course important, but maybe at least have a test site or something to experiment with, maybe a blog or anything just to play around with at least. And then can always grow it bigger as you go. But I like that tip too.
I mean, even practically, it costs money to live, so you need some income coming in. It's handy to keep your job and keep the income for a little while as well. I mean, personally, I didn't pay myself a salary out of my business for over a year when I started. So, you need to be able to live on something as well, whether that's your savings or whether you're kind of doing some other work on the side.
Agree. Cool. So yeah, let's dive into the book now. So yeah, it's awesome. You made it. It's Online Business in Asia is the name. How to Sell Online to the World's Largest Market. So do you want to maybe give a little bit of a highlight of the book?
I can introduce it a little bit. Basically, I wrote three major sections for the book. The first one is how to plan your business. And then the second one is how to start your business. And then thirdly, how to grow your business. So it's really a how-to book at the end of the day, written by me, an entrepreneur here in Asia who's done it before, has gone through the journey before. So it's not just theory, it's actual practical advice on what worked and what didn't work for me along the way. So yeah, I tried to cover through those three major sections, really everything from coming up with a business idea, analyzing the market, and then actually launching the business, how to set it up, where to set up an e-commerce business, what you need to know about taking payments and, writing your website copy and using WordPress or Shopify or whichever platform you choose to use, and then how to grow the business and market it and really make it thrive. Because it's quite cheap to set up an e-commerce business, especially if you use Shopify or something similar like that, a software as a service type of provider. But the reality is it does cost money and time to grow that business. And so I put a lot of the tools and a lot of the things that I've learned along the way into that section of the book, how to grow your business, how to grow your e-commerce business. And at the end, I threw in a lot of bonus stuff as well about, analyzing different online business models, what's working for different people, whether that's things like, the monthly subscription box, for example, where you subscribe to an e-commerce box of a certain product, whether that's a wine subscription or fashion or, there's kind of subscription boxes for everything these days. But kind of how to, getting sticky customers and how to, sell on different things like marketplaces like eBay and Amazon or even Taobao. So I threw a lot of ideas in there as well and some analysis on what's working for other people here in Asia. So, yeah, if you're thinking about starting an online business in this part of the world, There's not a lot of information available. A lot of it's quite US-centric and focused on the US market. So I thought, why not put something together that's completely focused here on this region and what's working here in 2015 in Asia in e-commerce. Awesome. So that's why I wrote the book and what we put together.
Great, great. Yeah, I'm sure it's going to help a lot of people and save them a lot of headaches that you've been through. So thanks for that. And So then the best way probably is for people to find you after the show if they have, you know, feedback, or of course the book is onlinebusinessasia.com, and the book is /ebook on onlinebusinessasia.com, right?
Yeah, that's right. So if you head to the site onlinebusinessasia.com, you can get in touch with me there as well. There's some ways of getting in touch. And if you want to take a look at the ebook there, it's available on the website. You can buy it straight there on the site as well, you can get that in for your Kindle or for a PDF format or whichever kind of e-reader you have.
Awesome. Thanks again, Damien, for coming on and sharing so openly. I always appreciate it, and I'm sure the listeners do too. So that's a wrap.
Yeah, pleasure, Mike. Nice to chat with you.
Appreciate that one, Damien, and I'm glad to see there's more people sharing about business in Asia. Like he said, there's not many of us, and it's really good to have him on and sharing and getting everybody to learn more about business here. So I hope to get him back on in the future. I have a whole bunch of other podcast interviews already recorded, and I'm just kind of, again, trying to figure out which order to put them in. Some things like e-commerce fulfillment from Hong Kong internationally, startup scene between the West and the East, and some other cool ones. So if you have some ideas of which ones you want, let me know. And I announced already, you might notice that this show is now every other week. That's because I've been experimenting with video. So we have Global from Asia TV that's on the alternating Tuesdays. So if you want to check some of those out, there's three online now, and watch me as a talking head on a video. It's globalfromasia.com/TV. And I'm getting pretty good feedback, and people give me some good ideas, and we'll be improving it. Video is a lot harder for sure, and just got to keep pushing ourselves right and learning. And I'm always open to feedback. Shoot them over at my email, mike@globalfromasia.com, or social media and all that fun stuff. If you like the show, I'm going to beg again, please support me with an iTunes review. We podcasters, if you listen to other shows, are always begging for reviews, and we are told that supposedly it helps us get more rankings in iTunes, which would mean more listeners like you guys, and you guys are awesome. So if you can help out, that would be great. So talk soon in the next couple weeks, and best of luck with your global businesses. Peace.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.